This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. It's time now for our weekly Africa update. Sudan, the United Nations, and the African Union have agreed to put on a hybrid force in Darfur. We'll get the latest. Plus, all you want to know about Gum Arabic and maybe more. And Sudanese students in Khartoum learning Chinese. For more, we turn to NPR East Africa correspondent Gwen Tompkins. She just returned from a trip to northern Sudan where she hobnobbed with spies.
Well, that's one way of putting it. I was there in Khartoum, actually, to cover a meeting of the Committee of Intelligence and Security Services of Africa. Now, this is pretty much a volunteer organization of spy agencies from around the continent. And the committee reports to the African Union, and they describe where security threats are occurring around the continent and what is being done or what needs to be done about them.
So what did you learn?
Not much at all, Farai. It was surreal. I mean, spies and intelligence agencies, I mean, they don't exactly love talking to the press. But these folks were about as tight-lipped as could be. The organizers wouldn't identify the participants by name. There was no agenda. And the reporters weren't privy to the deliberations. But those who spoke at the opening and closing ceremonies, they vaguely described some of the topics that have the committee's attention. Armed conflicts across the continent, human trafficking, that could mean slavery or prostitution or both, mercenaries, the drug trade, terrorism, of course. The Sudanese officials who were there, though, they seem to be intent on making a case against the international community's view on Darfur. They spent a lot of time saying that the reports of government-sponsored genocide, the reports of more than 200,000 dead there and 2.5 million people displaced are all exaggerated.
Well, certainly we've been hearing over the past few days that Sudan and the United Nations and the African Union have come to an agreement on a hybrid force in Darfur. What can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, members of the United Nations Security Council are here in East Africa, and they've met with Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. They say Bashir has agreed unconditionally to a force that's about 17,000 strong in Darfur. This would be a peacekeeping force. It would be administered by the UN and consist of mostly African Union peacekeepers on the ground. But, you know, Farai, I mean, seeing is believing. The Sudanese government is particularly good at dragging its feet or finding ways to stall a greater peacekeeping presence in Darfur. The UN thought it had a deal last fall, but that turned out to be something of a disappointment. And as I mentioned before, the Sudanese government's official stance is that there is no massive humanitarian crisis in Darfur.
Who do you think is going to keep this agreement on the rails moving forward? Which party among those is really going to be urging responsibility for the formation of this?
Well, it's the international community that has been pushing this peacekeeping force on the ground in Darfur. The Sudanese government has not really wanted the force there. They've been disseminating to some degree. They say that they are agreeing to a peacekeeping force, and then a few days later they say they didn't understand what it was exactly that the international community was asking. So I think that it would be fair to say that the UN, the United States, in particular Britain, these would be the parties who are most interested in keeping the peace in Darfur at this point, and also in encouraging the rebel groups on the ground in Darfur and the Sudanese government to really come to terms with the Darfur peace agreement, which the government and only one rebel group signed last year.
Folks have been watching the issues in Darfur and the issues over oil, but you also found an unusual agricultural connection between the Sudan and the U.S. What was that?
Well, this is a connection that has long been reported about, so it's not exactly as if I found it. However, I did go to learn a little bit more about it, and that is gum arabic. Now, this is something that you might not have heard of, but it's something that you have touched and eaten and smelled and tasted your entire life. I guarantee you. Now, this is a resin. It's a sap that comes from the Acacia Senegal tree, which grows all over Africa and also in India and in, you know, and in Latin America. But in Sudan, their trees make the best resin, the highest quality resin. And this resin, It's used in all things Farai. It is an emulsifier of the highest quality, which means that it keeps things together. It keeps ingredients together in just about everything, and so sort of suspended indefinitely. So that's why Coca-Cola never separates, you know, into water and sugar and flavoring, and you know what I mean. And just, you know, you don't see the particles of a Fanta, you know what I mean, the orange particles coming and settling at the bottom of the glass, because there's a little gum arabic in there that keeps it intact. Gum arabic is also in pharmaceuticals. That's what keeps your pills together. That's what keeps your cold medicine from separating. It's also in newsprint. So if you read the newspaper, you're pretty much benefiting from gum arabic, because gum arabic keeps the ink, the news ink, together. It keeps the color in watercolors. It keeps hard candy hard and together. I mean, gum arabic is sort of the little bit of mother's love, you might want to call it, that makes the world go round. And when President Clinton introduced economic sanctions against Sudan back in 1997, this was because of concerns over Sudan's ties with terrorists. About a dozen major U.S. industries lobbied the Clinton administration to exempt gum arabic from those sanctions. And you know, gum arabic has been exempt ever since. And so the thing is, even in this latest round of sanctions that were announced by the Bush administration, gum arabic, again, exempt.
Interesting. Well, you've also been taking a look at some educational questions in the region. Students in Sudan taking Chinese. Why? And where?
Well, they're taking it at the universities in Khartoum and in other areas of Sudan. And really, it comes down to jobs, Farai. You know, the Chinese and the Sudanese are in bed together on oil. They are a major partnership, and China is investing a great deal in Sudan in terms of infrastructure to get that oil out, and also more recently in trying to offer some type of humanitarian assistance in Darfur. The young people in Sudan, and who are most interested, as most young people are, in getting jobs once they get out of college, are trying to figure out the best way to get an edge in the job market, and that is to learn some dialect of Chinese, you know, to act as hopefully as translators that would be helpful to Chinese companies that are in Sudan. And so the Sudanese kids are hitting the Chinese language books pretty hard. They're also hitting the French books hard. The only books they don't appear to be hitting hard are the English language books.
For political reasons, question?
They are confused about Sudan's relationship with the United States. The U.S., of course, is slapping sanctions on Sudan. The U.S. doesn't have very friendly things to say about Sudan with regard to Darfur. So it's not exactly as if Sudanese kids are seeing a great payoff in learning English necessarily, or in cottoning up to American interests at this point. Which is not to say that the door is closed and that, you know, Sudanese kids hate the U.S. That doesn't seem to be the situation at all. But the money right now appears to be with the Chinese.
Before we let you go, let's talk a little bit about Somalia. What's happening there is being called the world's most underreported war. Why?
Well, because it's awfully dangerous to report. There's an insurgency at work in Somalia, a combination of clan militias, radicalized Islamists representing the movement that once controlled Mogadishu, and warlords. And they're challenging the transitional government in Somalia. Just this week, a bomb went off in Mogadishu that reportedly killed children, and even the president's spokesman was reportedly shot while sitting in traffic in the city. He survived, but there are concerns right now about a planned reconciliation congress that was supposed to occur this month that's now been postponed for the second time. It's going to happen next month, apparently, and it's being postponed because of concerns about violence. It's hard to know what's going to happen next in Somalia.
And is there any sense of what is going on the day-to-day in Mogadishu? Is there any sense of normalcy?
Well, the transitional government is trying to introduce a taxation policy that would appear normal to anyone living outside Somalia, but to the businesses within that country, this is something new. The government wants to tax businesses there, including cell phone companies. Now, you have to understand, Farai, that the only things that really work in Somalia right now are the cell phones. They've got great cell phone service and some of the cheapest in Africa. So it will be interesting to see whether these companies are willing to fork over tax money, and if they do, then it would represent a major step forward for the transitional government.
Well, Gwen, it sounds like, as usual, you have been quite on the move. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Farai.
NPR's East Africa correspondent Gwen Tompkins joining us from Nairobi, Kenya.